Hello and welcome to Raising a Pro. I'm Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. Before we get to today's show, which was taped a couple of months ago, I'd like to address what happened in our nation's capital a week ago. As if the past year didn't bring Black folks unprecedented trauma, January 6, 2021, white domestic terrorists stormed the nation's capital, incited and encouraged by a sitting president, Donald Trump. Watching the insurrection at the Capitol live on television was both unnerving and traumatic for those of us watching, and even more so traumatic for those Democrats, those public servants who feared for their lives inside, as the insurrectionists met zero resistance or force from law enforcement on the ground. Now, a week later, there are white folks who are calling for so-called healing and unity. However, we can't reach unity without accountability. It's impossible. And we know the games must all go on, but Black folks will not be sticking to sports. If you want Black folks to stick to sports as you continue to stick to your white supremacist ideology and behaviors, this will not be the day, the month, the year, or the lifetime that that happens. Racism provides zero escape for Black folks, so there will be no escape of accountability or reckoning for you. Now, back to the show. Give me a moment. I just need about 5 more seconds to breathe. I am breathing. Okay. Now, back to today's show. Today's guest I am so excited about. She's actually super awesome. Today's guest is Gwen Jenkins. She's the mother of Pro Bowl safety, humanitarian, Super Bowl winning Malcolm Jenkins, who won a Super Bowl with the New Orleans Saints in his rookie year about 10 years ago. And then won a second Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles in 2018. And now, guess what? He's back in New Orleans where it all began. And they are in the playoffs, of course. It's the Saints, right? Malcolm's journey is one that has his family written all over it. It starts with his mom, Gwen, who is the new president of the Pro Football Players Mothers Association, also known as PIFMA, all that good stuff. Anyway, Gwen is truly a powerhouse with a wealth of information and wisdom. Let's explore the journey of Malcolm Jenkins through the eyes of his mother, Gwen. So let's start from the beginning. You and your husband, you have 3 sons. You have Malcolm, Martin, and Miles. And so for Malcolm, when did he start playing football? And how did your family kind of approach sports?
We were always a football watching family. My husband played football in high school, you know, and growing up. He didn't go to school on an athletic scholarship. He went on an academic scholarship, but football was his passion. And I enjoyed watching football. So when we had kids, we introduced football at an early age, probably around 7 or 8. Malcolm started playing, about 8 years old, Pop Warner. And he enjoyed it, you know, so we thought. getting the kids involved, that was my husband's thing. Not only our children, but the children in the neighborhood would always come over, and he would be running drills in the backyard, running plays with them in the street, and then was really responsible for signing not only Malcolm and Martin up for Pop Warner, but the neighborhood kids up for football, because it gave that structure, that discipline, you know, at an early age.
And this was New Jersey. This was Piscataway, New Jersey.
Yeah, Piscataway, New Jersey, which has a really fine program for the residents in the community. You know, it's not at a cost to the parents or anything.
Which is awesome.
It is. My husband registered the kids, and at an early age, Malcolm wanted to quit, like might have been 2 years in. And my husband didn't let him quit.
Why did he want to quit?
You know, things get hard.
He's tired.
Malcolm is not one that adopts well with the yelling. You know, if you got coaches yelling at you and stuff like that, that's not the way you're going to reach him.
Eli's the same way. You know, just to tell you a quick story, I remember when Eli got to Ohio State, and at one point, Coach Combs, who's the cornerbacks coach, called me. And he was like, does Eli like it here? Does he want to be here? I was like, yeah. I was like, and I gave him advice because, you know, Coach Combs was a yeller. So I say, you know, if you want him to do something, just tell him. He doesn't respond to the yelling. He doesn't respond to the, you know how they try to play those mind games. I said, that's not who he is. You just got to talk to him. You know, and once we got that situated, he was fine because he thought, like most guys will react some kind of way, you yell. I was like, no, right. I'm not.
That wasn't working for Malcolm either. But you know, the funny part about it is we thought that once Malcolm started going back to practice, got him back in, you know, he's engaged. It's like, okay, finally, you know, we did our job as parents. And it wasn't until years later, he wrote an essay about his experience in football. He talked about the reason why he continued playing football is that he enjoyed the snacks. He, at the end of the game, they would have the free hot dogs, the free hot dogs and the free soda. That was his carrot. It wasn't the football. It was just like, I can get free hot dogs and soda. And I was like devastated because I'm like, okay, as a parent, I did my job. Yay, we got him to like football.
It was the hot dogs. It was the hot dogs with the mustard. Right. You were about to write a whole motivational book about how you got him.
Exactly, how I did it.
It was the hot dog.
It was the hot dog at the concession
It's funny.
But, you know, all along, he had great coaches, though, you know, great influences through the game of football. He had great role models, people poured into him at an early age, even when before he believed in himself. He had others that believed in him and expressed that, which is very important in any child's life.
Oh, especially young Black men, too. So that's major, major. And we're going to get to a lot of, I mean, just how Malcolm has evolved, not just on the field. I'm more impressed with him off the field, honestly. And he has two Super Bowl rings, so that says a lot. But anyway, let's get to high school, though. So he's playing football. What was the high school recruiting like at, you know, at the high school level for him? What was that like? Because he made it through Pop Warner. He made it through middle school, thanks to the hot dogs.
Yeah, he made it through then. And then, you know, he wasn't a sought-after recruit, actually. He may have been rivals, may have had him at a two-star, three-star top.
What do they know?
What do they know? Yeah, and a lot of that, I remember being really involved, and I know Malcolm really wasn't involved, but I was really involved in making sure that he had everything he needed for the clearinghouse, and had everything, you know, the courses he was supposed to be taking. Because, you know, if you don't know, you just think your kid is a great ball player and he's going to make it. But if you don't have those things in place, you get to the end of the road and realize, even though you have an offer, you're not prepared to go to college, you know. So having those things done and beginning of his junior year, he had an offer from Rutgers. That was his first offer. Very early on, he had an offer from Virginia Tech. And so we did the school visits. It wasn't until my younger sister got a job out in Ohio. She was out there for 6 months by herself. And we planned a family trip to go visit my sister. And while we were there, I said, well, what are we going to do with the kids? Oh, she's 15 minutes from Ohio State. Looked it up. They had a football camp. I registered my kids for football camp and a friend that Malcolm brought with him. They went to the camp. And his impression that he made on the coaches during that camp got him that scholarship.
It was Coach Tressel at that point.
It was Coach Tressel. Mel Tucker was the DB coach.
And Hazel. Was Coach Hazel there at that point?
Hazel was there from New Jersey. Right. And we didn't realize that all of those kids that were there were being scouted. You know, we were there as just, hey, this is the fun thing to do with our kids. We paid for the camp. And Malcolm made such an impression at that camp that after the camp, they called us in to talk to us about offering him. You know, it's like he may be the best DB we had here. And it was because he was very competitive, kept cutting the line when others were backing off, and got to get those reps in and got the coach's attention.
Now, did Malcolm at this point know that he wouldn't be getting a hot dog at this camp?
He knew it wasn't a hot dog, but he didn't realize that the stakes were scholarship.
Yeah.
You know, he was just there balling. You know, wasn't, oh, I'm there to impress the coach or I'm going to get a scholarship out of it. But the great thing is by the time we got home, drove home from Ohio and got home, the scholarship was in FedEx. It was in the mail. So,
wow. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was very cool.
So what made Ohio State at that point the choice for him?
Well, Ohio State was the biggest stage football that you can play on. Coach Tressel made a commitment that he's going to play the best player. It's not about where you are, whether you have the red shirt, who's the best, you know, at the time. So you have an opportunity if the opportunity's there, you know, he's going to put you on the field. Coach Tressel really made an impression on us, but we didn't put that on Malcolm as to what our choice was. We allowed him to make that choice. Ohio State would have been our choice, and he made that same choice. And I just think it was a great choice because Coach Tressel wasn't just focused on the football. He was focused on making sure that those guys were good citizens and responsible men.
That was Coach Tressel.
That's, to me, that's everything. You know, you can't go to a school visit and hear them talking about another kid.
Yeah.
Because that happened. And I'm like, that could have been my kid. And they're talking to another parent about another student. No. X that one off the list.
So Malcolm, Eli both went to Ohio State. Different times, of course. But let's get to Malcolm's experience at Ohio State. How was that? You know, I mean, that big stage and just playing at the highest level in college.
I think, you know, for Malcolm, and I saw this just throughout his life and the things that have evolved in his life, his preparation is everything. You know, when the opportunity comes, when you're prepared, you know, you can take advantage of that opportunity. He didn't start. And I believe it was a player that had to come out of the game because of contact, a loss of a contact lens. And his number was called. And he went in and he never left the field after that. And I said, because he was prepared.
Wow.
You know, he was ready when his number was called. And it was a big stage. It's nothing like the Buckeyes. You know, it was a fun experience for us, our family. It allowed our family to really bond. Even though we were in New Jersey, it gave us reason even to go out to Ohio to be with my sister, have my sister to be there for Malcolm. He pledged Omega there, which gave him, you know, that exposure to brotherhood and the whole fraternity, and really early on started making a difference in the community, even as a student, going to other schools and reading to kids and going to hospitals and just doing charitable work. So it was an overall well-rounded experience for him.
He had an excellent experience because he ended up in 2008 winning the Jim Thorpe Award, which is given the highest honor you can give to a DB. What was that like for you guys?
It was amazing. He had been nominated the year before. He won it that year. It was amazing just to be recognized at that level. It's something that he cherishes. And even after winning the Super Bowl with New Orleans and Miami, I remember him flying from the Super Bowl to Oklahoma City because Eric Berry had won it that second year and he wanted to be there to hand that torch off.
Wow, you know?
I'm celebrating, but this is important. And so it's something that they have their own community and we're really proud of him. And he was just recognized for his efforts.
So let me ask you, how did that transition? At what point did you see that Malcolm fell in love with the game?
Probably later years of high school when he started to believe that he could play at a higher level. You know, and then going to college, you're playing at the elite level and you're doing well, you know, and you're excelling. And at that point, my focus was the degree to make sure that he got his degree, you know, because a lot of times at your junior year, he could have walked and gone into the league. You know, he's playing at the highest level. You risk, you know, people look at it as a risk reward. You know, what happens in that last year if you decide not to go to the draft and now you get injured? But it's the education, because that can't be taken away from you. So going back after that junior year, it was him and a group of guys in his class that made that decision that they were going to finish their academic achievements, get their degree before going into the league. And I don't know when he recognized it, you know, as a mother, I want to say I recognized it at a very early age, his potential. But once he puts his mind to something, it's very competitive, very focused. And so once he puts his mind to something, he's giving it his all. He's going to do well in it because it's a full commitment. It's not half-stepping.
So let's get to the draft. And his 40-yard dash was not that fast. So tell me about that and what happened with that.
Well, you know, with the draft, it's one of those experiences. I watched the draft even before having children. It was something that I've always done. Like, I would watch every round of the draft when it was televised, right? So I'm into that stuff. And so watching the combines and all. So when his 40 wasn't that great, and I know what his potential is, but his 40 wasn't great. To me, it's like, okay, are you running a 40 in football? I mean, you have to run. Are you running a 40, you know?
Coach Gwynn is at it, y'all. Coach Gwynn.
So, you know, you get all of that.
They're so goofy with all those things, but whatever.
Yeah, you hear all the commentators talking about, you know, his stats, you know, his speed. And so he's going to fall, you know, in the draft and all of that. And I just believe God is going to put him where he's supposed to be.
Point blank, you know, and period. Yeah.
That's it. And it couldn't have been a better place than New Orleans. You know, we all celebrated that.
So tell me about the draft. What was that like hearing him go first round?
Oh, well, you know, and I don't want it to be received in a way, oh, you know, arrogance or anything. But I laugh about it today that it never crossed my mind that he would not be in the first round.
Come on now.
So wait a minute. So, you know, I had watched the draft all these years. And what I did not like about the draft is that you have these kids there and their parents and they're in the green room.
Oh, my God. Nerve wracking.
Cameras in their face and talking about their disappointment. That's so stressful. And it's just not even fair to the kids, you know, to see them have these expectations and then fall short of that.
In front of everybody, you're just sitting there.
Right.
It's like waiting to get picked on the playground, but this one is televised where you're not picked. It's just
you're
like, yeah.
You're not picked. And so in my mind, I'm like, okay, my son is in this position. We're not going to New York. And so I was so glad to hear that he didn't want to go to New York.
Wow.
Right? So he didn't want to go to New York, but he wanted to have a small gathering with family and friends, and he gave it to me to plan. And so I plan gathering with family and friends of about 200 people.
I don't even know 200 people. I don't about even 200 know 200 people.
We had a really nice shebang at the Hyatt Hotel in New Brunswick. I had a team who did my decorations. We had the runners on the table, which were the fields. We had the miniature football decor. I had a big balloon goalpost. And it was just really, to be honest with you, it was family and friends. It was all the people that I felt played a role in who Malcolm was and how he got there, from Pop Warner coaches to some of his teachers, to folks in the community that played a role in our family. And so it was giving everyone an opportunity to share in that experience. You know, usually you watch it on TV, but everybody had a role in that. And so it was really nice. You know, his brothers came up with a rap song and we gave speeches. I had a whole program.
Oh my God.
They televised it, you know, so that it was on camera. We got to celebrate that together as a family.
That's awesome.
It is. And then we videotaped it and everything.
And that's memorable. You'll never forget that. Well, before we get to the Saints, let me ask you, with three sons, right? How were you able to manage expectations or not making one person feel less special or more special? How was that? Because sometimes in family, you know, not to get biblical with Cain and Abel, but like in general, siblings can get jealous of one another, or one can feel like one is getting more attention than the other, but though you have given them all the same opportunity, you know, in that sport. How were you able to manage raising three men, young men, up level?
You know, as a parent, whether there's a sport involved or not, I mean, you know, it's no different challenge than it is just raising children, you know, is that they are all unique. You know, you want to say you're raising them the same, but they're not the same. They're all different. They have different needs and you have to cater to those different needs. Make sure you're not comparing them, you know, and make sure that they don't buy into the outsiders who may, you know, make you believe that you should be compared to your brother. You know, oh, your brother is this. That thought process is not in our household. You know, it's like we celebrate whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's football related or not, is important. You know, you nurture your children. It's not a competition between each other. This is your path. All of them, you know, are successful in their path. And it doesn't have to be the same.
So how was it for Malcolm going from New Jersey, Piscataway, New Jersey, Ohio State, now to New Orleans? Like, what was that like for him?
Exciting.
Really?
You know, there's no place like New
Orleans. There is no place like New Orleans.
You know that.
Yes.
And New Orleans, it came to love Malcolm. Malcolm came to love New Orleans. And it's the people in New Orleans that, you know, welcomed him and made it home for him really quickly. And it's his home, you know, he has a home there now and he's back there now. So the stars align where they should be.
Yeah, we're going to get free agency, of course, tricky thing. But he goes to New Orleans. They win a Super Bowl. What was that like for you? The Super Bowl?
Insane. For us, it was just one of those, okay, this is just the pattern of his life. It's just like, okay, here's another high moment that I feel he's prepared for, but destined for. You know, it's like the stars couldn't align for us. We couldn't have planned this journey for Malcolm. You know, it's not ours. It wasn't ours. It wasn't scripted by us. But to have him, the way things played out, going to Ohio at a time when we needed him in Ohio, my sister needed that, and he needed to have some support in Ohio, and then to be able to come to New Orleans and win a Super Bowl your rookie year.
Insane.
After winning the Thorpe Award, you know, and I met some great people who became members of my board who were committed to the vision and mission, you know, that he wanted to make an impact in that community. At that time, there's a lot of gun violence happening right after the Super Bowl, and he was really committed to making a difference, you know, putting his name and money and energy behind a community that was new to him, but he had already, you know, was invested in.
Now, we're going to get to the future president of the United States, Malcolm Jenkins, in a minute. let's talk about, I mean, from Ohio State, the Jim Thorpe Award, coming your rookie year, winning the Super Bowl. I mean, everything is up. It's always up, like, highest level. How did you kind of help him keep a level head on, like, because we know NFL life is so up and down. So how were you able to kind of manage expectations and reality?
One of the things is always just trying to be informed, right?
Yeah.
You try to educate yourself and all, and not buy into the hype. You know that it's a business. And when they love you, they love you. When you're done, you're done. and so one of the things he's always said, don't read the media, you know, don't read articles, don't read the comments,
don't,
you know,
that is such sound advice.
Get caught up in that.
Yeah.
Don't read the comments, you know, and don't start believing the hype. You know, you've got some great articles. Yes. But when you start believing all of that, just do what you're doing.
Yeah.
Do the work.
Yeah.
It's not about the accolades and in who's talking about you.
I always say, don't believe the hype and you won't have to worry about the hate. You know what I mean? Because it's like,
it
does, neither one matters, you know?
And just staying grounded.
Exactly.
You know, staying grounded, remembering who you are, always just being engaged with who you are, your family, and the circle of people who are closest to you, who got you where you are, you know, who still has your best interests, you know, at heart. And that's proven to be good for him, a good recipe for him.
We need Malcolm to write a book about how he's able to stay so healthy for so long. That's, you know, one thing you know, you do deal with injuries, whether it's ankle, whether it's this, but how has he been able to, you know, going like 12th year right now, and we're going to get to free agency
season.
In a minute, 12th season.
Yes.
So how has he been able to stay so healthy?
He takes his body, you know, and taking care of his body seriously, you know, the smallest things. He's not going to just brush over him. Okay, give me a pain pill. Let's keep it moving. You know, it's getting to the core of what the problem is, making sure you're replenishing your body, you know, after exertion, making sure you get rest, and he's eating right. I mean, he's a vegan. And it's so funny when he decided to do that.
How long has he been a vegan? Because he loved the hot dog. It was the hot dogs that got him playing football. So for him to turn his back on the hot dogs.
Yeah, I had to get him off the hot dogs. Yeah. I had to get him off a lot of things. He went vegan maybe about 5 years now, 4 or 5 years. And it was right before a training camp. And I was like, you sure you want to do this right now? And when he did it, he said he never felt better. He actually was performing at the highest level in his career. And when the coaches was trying to figure out what was going on, and he told them he had stopped eating. And, I mean, he went straight, no dairy, no eggs, no, you know, and he was performing at a very high level. So it proved to be a good solution for him. And he kept that, you know, those habits up. And I heard just the other day, And it made me feel good as a parent when you hear other players at the highest level playing, talking about Malcolm taught them how to take care of their bodies. Malcolm, you know, they watched him or you know, they learned from him. Coach Chip Kelly came into the Eagles. Now, I know people say things about Chip Kelly, but one thing he was about is that sports science. He was about teaching players about taking care of their bodies and monitoring everything about the body, whether what's going in it, how the body's reacting and performing. And that was unique for Malcolm at that time. And he came into the Eagles when Chip Kelly was there, that he had learned from him because that was not in place prior to that. That's not what he had experienced with the Saints.
So he's with the Saints and then free agency comes up. How was that for you when he wasn't signed with them and he had to go and test the market? What was that like? Because you come in and you think this is where you're going to stay. This is where you're going to be.
Let me tell you.
Tell us.
You need to ask my mother on that because she's still pissed off. Because it's not so much, you know, you have the right, you know, as a business to, you know, change characters or whatever, players, but not to have a conversation. They didn't have a conversation with Malcolm. So free
that's very saint-y. That's very saints.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, you don't hear anything. And so literally a minute into free agency, the Eagles called Malcolm and he accepted. You know, it was like, okay, we're going this way. Didn't hear from the Saints.
No, but how did that make him feel? Because I think for me, that's the hardest part about this because there's zero loyalty. And the players are treated as this disposable. Everybody's replaceable. And that's frustrating because you think you're building relationships. Even if you don't want me, communicate, be on the same page. So I'm sorry, but that's the hardest part.
That is. And he carried that for quite some time of the way that was handled because it is about relationships. Everything's about relationships. And so you give your all, you know, 5 years, you're loyal to a team and you even when, you know, you're not feeling your best, you're putting it out there for the team. But then the team, is, you know, doesn't reciprocate. So he was really upset about that for a while. But, you know, again, you know, it's not our plan. And it was to me revealed that was the best plan, that he was removed from that situation, came into the Eagles. You know, they won a Super Bowl. They embraced him, the community. Once again, in that same way, in that same experience, some things you need to walk away from too. You know, sometimes you don't understand it at the time when it's a break, but there's a reason for that.
That's the thing. Listen, we understand it's a business, but treat each person as a person. You know, if your boss want to let you go, you would want to hear from them. You don't want to just come in and then unlock the door. And then unlock the doors. That's right. How you know you know what I mean?
It's just right. You know, it's not like you're talking about, oh, let's be friends forever. You know? But it's just like, okay, we've come to the end of the road and we're going to have to make some business decisions. We thank you for your
something like that. Because I think what the league failed to realize for our sons, because football has taken so much of their time. In high school, you know, I had my first job when I was like 14 years old. But for a lot of these young men, the NFL is their first job. I mean, they work in college, but they don't get paid. So now you're coming into, there's so much you're learning. You have to learn on your own. So, well, anyway, Malcolm goes to Chip Kelly's Eagles. Chip Kelly then is gone. Doug Peterson come in. Like, how does he handle the whole, it was so, first of all, Philadelphia, I went to high school and college in Philly. Philly's a whole different, it's a whole different beast when Eagles fans. What I love most about Malcolm when he went from New Orleans to Eagles, like he was always Malcolm, you know, because it's so easy in this business to have fan control how you roll, you know, and what you do. But he always maintained who he is. How did he handle the change, though, from Chip Kelly to Doug and all the Eagles media? It just never stops. The Eagles sports media.
He was always in a position where he had to show who he is. Even starting at Ohio State, he wasn't a top recruit. You know, they had somebody already locked for that position. you know, Ohio Buckeye, whatever. Somebody from Ohio was.
Somebody lost their contacts.
Yeah, somebody lost their contacts. Somebody lost their position and he got it. It was like, who is this? You know, when he came in there. When he went to the Saints, although eventually the community embraced him, when they, he was the first pick for the Saints, it didn't get a lot of hoop. It was like, who is this? You know, we don't know. It should have been so-and-so.
Who of course. This? It's always you should know, have been so-and-so.
Wasn't good enough. And then when he went to the Eagles, the Eagles fans, who is this? You know, why didn't we get, I think they were looking for Bird or somebody. Why didn't we get this guy?
And and they thought Malcolm, oh, he's at the end of his career and all of this. You know,
yeah. People you got just, a lot of that.
Yeah.
And then even going back, it's the same thing. So it's like, if you get caught up into worrying about those conversations, those remarks, it's like, be who you are, show up, do your job, do it the way you know to do it best, you know, and let the chips fall. You know, you can't get caught up into what others think you should be doing, or like to your point, trying to get approval from, you know, the fans and approval from this. Just show up and do the job, know what you need to do, know who you are.
You know, I quote a wise man all the time. If you live by the, you know, acceptance of others, you will die by their rejection. So you just really have to just know who you are and let that be your focus, which is not always easy because I would, you know, because maturity, it takes time and just adapting. And, you know, when you're on a large stage where there's no room for error, but you just have to continue to just develop who you are. And that's why a great family and a great support system is so important. Let's go to that Super Bowl. You know, this was, I know Andy Reid was there. He went to a lot of divisional championships. We went to the Super Bowl once. I'm so weak because I was living in Philadelphia at that time. So Malcolm comes in and they win the ultimate prize. What was that like just watching that? And that wasn't an easy season.
It wasn't an easy season, but very exciting, proud of his role in that, because I saw his role in how he helped, you know, during the course of that season, keep that team on track. You know, they had a lot of injuries, if you recall, that year. At one point, he's out there playing with a lot of newbies, you know, rookies, and just his leadership in holding that team together, his contribution to that Super Bowl was great to see. It was a deserving team. They showed up and showed out, and we were just excited as parents with a stake in the game, but as fans of the team, you know, it was exciting. It was rewarding at the end. They deserved that.
February 4th, 2018 was a very happy day for you guys and a very sad one for Tom Brady. but Tom has moved on. So let's get to now he's done the Eagles things. How did he now end up back in New Orleans?
He was coming up on a year in his contract where they had agreed that they would renegotiate his contract or consider renegotiation by the beginning of, I think he had 2 years left on that contract. He was definitely underpaid at that point. You know, he had outplayed his contract in terms of comparing others in the league and his position and what the salary was. And so he went that whole year playing in good faith.
Ooh, good faith in NFL. Good faith in NFL.
Good faith that would happen. But with the understanding, if it didn't happen, they would let him walk before free agency. It was what I'm understanding anyway. And so when they did not renew his contract, he was able to, you know, get offered. And the Saints came knocking. And Sean Payton says, you know, they wish they had never let him go from the beginning. So
now, how is it when you go back to an ex who was a bad communicator?
An ex said, "Oh, I didn't know what I had when I had it."
Didn't give you back your hoodies. Didn't even text you that it was over.
Nope.
You know, you just showed up to the place and they were gone, and you were and somebody else was in your bed.
Somebody else is in the bed. So,
tell me, how is it that you go back to this ex? Please, that's what I want to know. How did you go back to this ex?
You know, and the funny part about it, I couldn't find my Saints jersey. I still can't find my Richard. I think I may have threw it away. in a fit. It's somewhere around here, but I can't find my original. I know I have it, but probably when I was pissed off, I probably took, you know, tucked it away somewhere. And now I'm like,
oh, yes. No, how did he break the news to you that I'm going back to my ex? That's what I want to know.
Oh, I was so happy, though. I was really, of all the places he could have landed, thrilled that it was back in New Orleans. Not only a good place for him, you know, coming on the backside of his career, to be back where he was drafted. Our foundation still has work there. We're there in New Orleans with a footprint of the work that we're doing with the community, friends that are there. So it's just like a welcoming back home.
And I want to talk a little bit more about Malcolm's work off the field. You run the Malcolm Jenkins Foundation, not just because you're his mother, but because you have 20 plus years of leadership experience. How has what you have always done kind of impacted Malcolm's passion now when it comes to leadership and community service?
Well, you know, it's about equipping young people to take it to the next level. And it's about pouring into young people just the way others poured into his life, right? Where, and it's not always just your parents that's going to have that role, because it wasn't just Lee and myself that made an impact on Malcolm's life, but it was people along his journey. And through his own experience, understanding the importance of having those role models and what impact that can have on a child's life, right? And so trying to fill in the gap for those kids who may not have that. And even though he's one person, the foundation allows us to expand his reach and connect with more kids than he could ever do individually, but collectively as an organization and partnering with like-minded organizations and people who want to make a difference and that same type of impact, but may not have that platform. Through the foundation, they're able to do that. And we're able to reach more kids and make a difference in that way, because we know the difference that can make having, you know, someone to believe in you, someone to pour into your dream, someone to uplift you and feed you, you know, when you're hungry. And so that's what we do. And that's what we've been doing now for 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah, we're celebrating our 10th anniversary. I'm the boots on the ground, and we're a small but mighty force, and we're in four states. Right now with COVID even, just trying to make sure that we can continue to impact students and the greater need now in terms of education and the lack of, because of closing schools and opportunities, you know, making sure that we still fill that gap, even if it's virtually, digitally, which is what we're working on now.
I know in 2017, he and Anquan Boldin co-founded the Players Coalition. And there was a bit of issue in the media with that, because some felt that it was undercutting Kaepernick.
So I know the Players Coalition, and they're basically making an impact on racial inequality, social justice issues. They're changing laws.
Police brutality.
They're speaking out. They're doing ride-alongs. They're just trying to provide an opportunity where players can have an influence and an impact in their communities.
It's amazing to me that, you know, as African-Americans, as Black people, that when it's time for us to express our trauma and our experience, we're always trying to find the right way to say it as to not offend anybody else. I remember Bernice King, who's Dr. King's daughter, once tweeted, it's like, there's no right way not to offend a racist, right? We're trying to twist ourselves and trying to not, but the pain is ours, and we're trying to find a way not to offend. For Malcolm to have found his way into, like, listen, this is what I see and this is what I want to be a part of, and I'm not trying to distance myself from it, I thought it was very admirable.
I think, you know, history shows us in any movement, you're going to have that. You know, you're going to have, you know, people who have different views, but it's made to be more of him against him, you know, instead of, you know, we're trying to do the same thing, but we just have a different path, a different way we want to go about it, and that being okay. But if you look back, it's always, you know, that mentality of we got to pit one against the other. And all that does is distracts from what you're trying to accomplish and defeats what you're trying to do for either, you know, either party. And so trying to keep him focused to say not to get distracted by that, stand in the truth of, you know, what your truth is, speak out on those issues and stay focused as to what you're trying to accomplish and not to get distracted by that. Because that's just noise. I'm glad to see that he and many other guys stayed committed, even if it was a division in the team in terms of what direction they wanted to take to address the main issue of police brutality and inequities in our community. It doesn't matter what path they take, as long as that's the goal and that's the focus.
What can we expect from Malcolm Jenkins in the future?
Well, you know, Malcolm just...
Yeah, he signed with CNN as a contributor.
He's a CNN contributor. Yes, that's exciting. He just also launched a movie, executive producer on a movie, Black Boys.
Yes, saw that.
It's streaming right now on Peacock, and it talks about how the humanity of Black boys and men are under attack at an early age. And it's a powerful story that comes with a written curriculum for schools and organizations to, you know, get engaged into supporting Black boys and men. Just the other day, he launched the Broad Street Ventures, which is the first Black athlete-founded venture capitalist fund.
Yes, $10 million, different athletes. Yes.
With different athletes that's mm-hmm. got behind that to, you know, help with wealth creation in communities of color. And then he has another film that's coming down the pipe, Black Girls. Malcolm's a creator. You know, he has his suit line, does his fashion. But on the foundation side, as well as through all of his endeavors, is making sure that there's an avenue where he's giving back, where he's educating young people how to find their own career paths, how to be creators and innovators. And using his own life as an example of that. I mean, you know, he wants to do this and then find out, you know, educate yourself on what you need to do. And you can do it as well. You know, it's different paths to success. That's the message. You know, he wants to give children as well as be the see it, be it role model. You know, giving kids a role model that is other paths other than entertainment and athletes that you can pursue and be successful.
What's the best advice you think you've ever given him?
The best advice, and I'm going to take credit for this one, but I know he would say his father. you don't know what you don't know, right? That's something like we live by that with our kids growing up. It's like, you don't know what you don't know, meaning that there's always, if you're in a situation, there's always something you're not aware of. You may not be prepared for. You know, don't go into a situation thinking you know it all. No matter how much you think you're prepared, there's always an unknown and there's always something you don't know. So if you approach something with open mind and understanding, knowing that it's always an opportunity to learn, you'll be okay. But if you go into a situation thinking you know it all, then you're doomed.
Yeah.
You're doomed.
Yeah.
For failure, you know, because you're not open to realizing that you're not the smartest one in the room, you know, and you don't want to be the smartest one in the room.
And if you are, you're probably in the wrong room.
You're in the wrong room.
What great advice from Gwen. So much wisdom, so much insight. She's right. You truly don't know what you don't know. And when we embrace life as a process of learning and exploring, every day brings new insights into who we are and the world around us. I'm still taken back by the fact that the Saints did not even call Malcolm. They just let him go. I loved when Gwen talked about the fundamental of leadership, which brings me to today's Annie's Clapback. This game in its male-only domination reduces players to numbers, profits, and losses, not people. The game often talks about leadership, but they fail at exercising true leadership. True leadership is communication, talking about it. True leadership is honesty and vulnerability. And if you can't be vulnerable, you're not a leader, you're just a dictator. And the world does not need another dictator. Leadership not only respects players' talents, but more so respects players' humanity. And on that note, I just want to say thank you all so much for listening. Raising a Pro is part of the Audio Boom Originals Network. And if you're feeling this podcast, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time, family.